But first we dim the house lights for 30 Minute Theatre.
Curtain Call by Jeremy Tiptoft. With George Cooper as the first gent and David Garth as the second gent. Curtain Call.
Here's the bus stop. A number 35. That'll take us to Rosebery Garden.
Are you sure that was the address?
Quite sure.
So this is Broadstairs. I can't think what Dickens sees in it. Why couldn't we have gone to Brighton?
London by the sea. I thought you wanted to change from all that seclusion and some sea air. Respite from the hurly-burly.
There is a difference, albeit a subtle one, between seclusion and solitary confinement.
You can recoup with bracing walks whilst I take the opportunity of a little quietitude to work on my second symphony.
Your second symphony? Oh, yes, I was forgetting. The great composer Beethoven's Heir Apparent.
It will be therapy in itself to get down to some serious work after those potboilers.
Potboilers? Together we have brought the pleasures of comic opera to millions, and you call them potboilers?
You delight in the hoi polloi, my dear fellow. Nobody can deny it. But at bottom, you're a cultural philistine. Your boorish reaction to the revival of my cantata, The Martyr of Antioch.
Your cantata?
Due to be performed this very evening in Liverpool.
Oh, hasn't Liverpool suffered enough? If I am a cultural philistine, you, sir, are a snob. Set Paradise Lost to music and you'll empty the stalls in 5 minutes. A sure pointer to artistic greatness, I suppose you'd say. But if that's your attitude, it butters no parsnips.
Mozart died a pauper.
You're too fond of the fruits of success for such a fate. Oh, you're quite happy to ape the great Ludwig and go mooning about the countryside with notebook and pencil, provided you can finish off the day with a glass of claret and a good cigar.
Did you pack it, by the way, the claret?
I did indeed. And I'm glad to see that your preoccupation with the sacred muse has not affected your priorities.
Here we are, number 35. Well, hail it, man. It's a request stop.
Are you sure we got the right address?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Mr. Whitner.
At your service.
I phoned your wife. We booked 2 single rooms for 2 nights.
Rooms 3 and 4, sir. First landing on the left.
Oh, thank you. Splendid.
Full board.
If you please.
Right you are, gentlemen. If you could just sign the book.
Of course.
Thank you, Dr. Sullivan. And you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Gilbert. I suppose everybody says it is quite a coincidence, eh?
Coincidence?
Well, Gilbert, sir. Gilbert and Sullivan.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Gilbert and Sullivan, sir. You know, the Mikado, Wild End thing.
Mere pot boilers, Mr. Wintner.
Pot boilers?
I'll try, Mr. Wintner. We'll go and get freshened up.
Oh, yes, of course, sir. Mrs. Wintner will be serving dinner in 15 minutes, if that's convenient.
Excellent, thank you. Come along, Gilbert.
Oh, I'm coming.
Come in.
Oh, could I possibly use your razor point, Sullivan? The one in my room seems to have gone fat.
Carry on, my dear fellow.
thank you. Well, I do hope Mrs. Wintner's culinary skills are superior to her electrical arrangements. When you think our Savoy was the first theatre to be lit by electric light, the irony does not escape me, Sullivan. What on earth possessed you to reserve rooms in this doll's house?
I thought it was privacy. You craved, Gilbert.
It is the burden of fame, Sullivan, that those of us who retain a seemly modesty must creep about our native land with, as it were, blankets over our heads, like a rapist being taken to the assizes.
Ooh, a delicate metaphor.
In point of fact, it was a simile. But I wouldn't expect a mere musician to know that, or even think that it mattered.
Oh, for a good dinner, Sullivan. I suspect, however, that we're about to partake of soup of the day, a fillet of place with chipped potatoes, then fruit salad and condensed milk to follow.
Some more fruit salad, Gilbert.
Mm.
Condensed milk?
No, thank you.
I'll finish it then. 8 Bulwell Terrace, Gilbert. That's where I was born, in Lambeth.
Oh, sun-kissed Lambeth.
My father was getting a guinea a week playing clarionet at the Royal Surrey.
I do hope you enjoyed your dinner, gentlemen.
Oh, Mozart to the palate, Mrs. Whitmer.
Oh, I see you have your namesake's gift for a phrase, Mr. Gilbert.
Namesake?
Would you like coffee?
Thank you. White coffee, Gilbert?
Please.
One white, one black. Thank you. Oh,
I'll get them right away.
Preparatory to taking the air, may I inquire, Sullivan, into the present state of your finances?
I beg your pardon.
Having already footed the bill for conveyance from the station by omnibus, I am anxious to establish that my monetary commitments end there, or rather, here.
Am I a sponger? Is that the charge?
Not at all, but I think you are sometimes lacking in thrift. Didn't you tell me that the fee you received for conducting the Leeds Festival, 300 guineas, was as much as you won, or more probably lost, in one night at Monte Carlo?
I fail to see the relevance of any comparison between Monte Carlo and Broadstairs, which boasts no higher casino than an arcade or fruit machine.
Here are your coffees, gentlemen.
Thank you. Mrs. Whitner, and what with the fruit machines?
Fruit machines, Doctor?
In the arcade.
Oh, it's open this evening.
Yes, life in the old town yet, then.
Tomorrow the Social Democrats are holding a coffee morning.
Social Democrats? Bliss, was it, in that dawn to be alive?
I see your moribund traditionalism in art is mirrored by a similar propensity in politics, Gilbert. The Social Democrats could herald the birth of a new era.
A new era? In which you are finally recognized as a serious composer?
I'm sure of it.
When the hapless citizens of Liverpool succumb to the genius of the Martyr of Antioch, a sacred cantata.
Of course.
Romantic claptrap. You, Sullivan, are haunted by the romantic as I am haunted by the ridiculous. It is the creative tension between we two which gives our partnership its dynamism. Oh, come along, my dear fellow. Let's take this lethal sea air. Social Democrats. Dictatorial. The Social Democrat.
Donald?
Yes, dear?
The new guests.
Well, Gilbert and Sullivan.
Such an odd coincidence.
Yes, it's rather extraordinary.
Did they sign the register?
Yes. It's here, on the sideboard. Look, there's their signatures.
Oh. A. Sullivan, W.S. Gilbert. I'm sure those were his initials, W.S. Gilbert. And A. Sullivan. Arthur Sullivan!
It is odd. These things happen. We had a PT instructor in the army. Absolute swine. George Formby.
Really?
Yes, wasn't even a relation.
Dr. Sullivan was saying his father used to play the clarionet for a guinea a week. Well, I know it sounds silly.
Well, it is silly, isn't it, love? Now, look at that barmaid in a white heart. She's called Lily Langtry.
Yes.
Now, she's not the Lily Langtry, is she? She's just a Lily Langtry. Not that she'd thank me for pointing it out.
I bet she wouldn't.
Confound it. 2 pears and an apple. For a serious composer, Sullivan, do you think this is your right setting? I really don't understand the mystic hold these contraptions have over you. Would you believe it? Two apples and a pear. Let me have 10 penny pieces, a good fellow.
Oh, you shameless bounder.
Oh, yeah. But no more, you understand?
Thank you, Gilbert. Ho, 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 ho! Three apples! But they are, Gilbert. My, oh, my.
And don't I get any share in this largesse? Seeing that it was my investment which won the money.
Of course, Gilbert. Here's your 10 pence.
You have raised the country to the level of an art form. Why are you in such a manic festive mood, for heaven's sake?
There is something in the air, Gilbert.
Rotting seaweed is low tide.
Vindication is in the air. This evening, the martyr of Antioch is revived in Liverpool, a bleak outpost of the provinces. But on Saturday, London, and we shall be there, Gilbert.
You shall be there, Sullivan.
What? I have deliberately delayed my appearance because of the dismal environs and because you loathe first nights.
Very kind of you, dear fellow, but I shall be totally out of my depth in such a rarefied atmosphere. If your star is about to rise, let me gaze wonderingly from afar, as one might glimpse the splendors of Halley's Comet. In the meantime, we can scour the morning papers tomorrow for proof of your Merseyside apotheosis. And to bring you gently to earth for just a moment, if you wish to remain solvent, I would advise you as to the prudence of considering work on another comic opera with my idea of the magic lozenge.
Magic sausage.
Donald?
Yes, dear?
It's raining.
I was aware of that, Hazel.
Such a pity for the new guests. Did they go out?
Dr. Sullivan's upstairs reading the papers. Mr. Gilbert's in the lounge.
They ate a good breakfast. Donald.
Yes, dear?
Did you hear them come in last night?
No. Must have been late.
They woke me up crossing the landing. They were having a row. I don't know how you slept through it. Do you know what they were rowing about?
Is it any of our business?
A magic lozenge.
A magic lozenge?
This morning I asked the boy to pop down to Betty's and bring me back her book on Gilbert and Sullivan.
Oh, now look, dear.
Now listen to this. The magic lozenge was an idea that haunted Gilbert for years. By swallowing a lozenge, a character could be changed into another character. Sullivan disliked the notion. It was too artificial.
Oh, you dreamt it.
But it's written down here, Donald.
The row you heard last night, you dreamt it.
But I didn't know about the lozenge, Donald. How could I dream about the lozenge when I didn't know about the lozenge?
Look, what are you asking me to believe? That we've got the actual Gilbert and Sullivan on full board?
It wasn't a dream, Donald.
I'm sorry to have to say this, Hazel, but ever since you started going to those seances with the occult circle, you've gone quite cranky. Playing the Ouija board, reading tarot cards.
There's a lot in it, Donald.
It's mumbo-jumbo, Hazel. Mumbo-jumbo. Now, out of my way, love, I've got to make Mr. Gilbert his coffee.
Good morning, Mr. Gilbert.
Ah.
Coffee, sir.
Oh, that's very civil of you.
I see you have the morning papers now, sir.
Yes, my colleague had dumped them outside his room.
And how is Dr. Sullivan, sir?
Oh, still upstairs, working on his symphony.
Oh, he's a musical writer, is he?
I like that, Mr. Whitner. Dr. Sullivan, as you know, has many talents. Unfortunately, they are sometimes subsumed by delusions of grandeur. You've heard of the golden legend?
Jesse Owens, sir.
Oh, Jesse Owens. Oh, I like that, Mr. Whitmer. I like that. No. The oratorio of the golden legend is Dr. Sullivan's R101. A vast, creaking bag of hot air that scarcely got off the ground, despite the plaudits of Queen Victoria.
Well,
What year was that, sir?
1886.
1886?
Yes, Martyr of Antioch was written in 1880 for the Leeds Festival. Ever heard of the Martyr of Antioch?
Was that with the Charlton Heston, sir?
Not if he had any sense. No, a sacred cantata for soloists, chorus and orchestra.
Ah.
Music by Dr. Sullivan, based on a poem by the very Reverend Milman, Dean of St. Paul's. Can you imagine the contemporary equivalent? Music by Stephen Sondheim, book by the Bishop of Durham. And to think I was actually persuaded to collaborate in this perpetration by adapting the words, some of which were the last inflicted on the public ear at Sullivan's funeral. Brother, thou art gone before us. Oh, yes, it has been exhumed, Mr. Winter, dug up by misguided enthusiasts calling themselves the Northern Victorian Music Society, inflicted on the wretched inhabitants of Liverpool as a vicious imposition of Victorian values, and due to arrive in Forest Hill as part of the South London Festival on Saturday evening.
Oh.
Well, if Dr. Sullivan was hoping for pains of praise in this morning's papers, he has been most rudely disappointed. Not a word in any of them.
No, we couldn't get the Times, sir. There was some trouble with distribution. It may arrive later.
Oh, yes, the Times must be Dr. Sullivan's last hope. It still has a penchant for non-events. Public school soccer and real tennis.
Well, I don't know.
What's the matter, Donald?
It is a bit of an oddball, Hazel. Been going on about all sorts of things in there. The Leeds Festival in 1880. Queen Victoria.
Oh, didn't I tell you, Donald?
There must be some perfectly simple explanation. We haven't got V. Gilbert and Sullivan on full board, Hazel. You can forget that.
I still don't like it, Donald. It's weird. I could ring Marjorie Hinton Smythe at the Occult Circle.
You're not ringing that nut. She'll be down with half the committee.
But they may have escaped from an institution. The police. That's it. I'll ring the police.
You'll do no such thing, Hazel. You're in a state of total panic. What sort of an advertisement is it going to be if the police start knocking at the door? I'm going to get to the bottom of this, Hazel. Just leave it to me, my dear.
Thank you very much, Barman. Well, I see the Times has changed its format, Sullivan. Used to have advertisements on the front page, remember? Oh, you remember? I thought the review...
I don't wish to discuss the review.
I see.
The work was obviously crushed, mauled and desecrated beyond description by incompetent amateurs.
But of course. So you are no doubt relieved that the company will now bring to London the second item from its repertoire, a concert performance of Ruddy Gore. And how's the symphony coming along?
Slowly.
Well, yes. What is the gestatory period for a serious composer? Like an elephant, is it?
Be careful, Gilbert. I'm not in the mood.
But of course. I understand. You dashed off, take a pair of sparkling eyes at 3 a.m. Mere fluff. Whereas your plebeian insomniac might content himself with a cup of cocoa. Oh, stare it in the face, Sullivan. There's nothing left of your oeuvre sérieux now. The years have sifted the chaff, and what remains? The Mikado, the gondoliers, the yeomen of the guard. Are you really at pains to become another Bernard Shaw, pacing the study carpets of eternity, fretting that he's remembered for Pygmalion and you never can tell, rather than the pretentious absurdities of Back to Methuselah? Where are you going?
Back to the lodgings.
But the local operatic society is doing King's Rhapsody. The music's by that talented Mr. Ivor Novello, a Welshman. Such a musical nation. I thought you'd like to go. We might get converted to Republicanism.
If you really want to know the truth of the situation, Gilbert, it is this. You need me, I don't need you.
You haven't finished your drink.
Without a collaborator, Gilbert, you are nothing.
Pot and Kettle, Sullivan. That must be the name of our next piece. Not Cox and Box, but Pot and Kettle.
Bell, Book and Candle.
What?
They could be some kind of manifestation. We could call in a priest with bell, book and candle. Bell, book and candle.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't keep repeating that incantation, Hazel.
They're awfully late.
Get undressed. Come to bed.
Where are they?
They went for a drink.
It's gone closing time.
Then they're walking back. They don't have to run, you know. There's no curfew. Anyway, I've got the answer.
Ah.
It's all here in today's paper. Just you listen to this. The Cowboys of West Bromwich.
They don't come from West Bromwich, Donald.
Will you listen? At weekends, Arthur Collins, accosting clerk from Birmingham, exchanges his city clothes for the chaparajos and 10-gallon hat of the Wild West. On a patch of waste ground behind an office block in West Bromwich, Arthur and his friends... Arthur and his friends act out the legendary exploits of the Rio Grande.
I don't understand.
Don't you see? If it's acceptable to spend weekends playing Buffalo Bill, why not Gilbert and Sullivan?
Stop! I've never heard anything so...
Shh, there they are.
One might as well argue that because the mousetrap has run for a million years, it's the greatest work in the history of the theatre.
That's taking the argument to its logical extreme. If you take any argument to its logical extreme, it becomes, if so facto, illogical.
What's this with your ipso facto? Ipso facto, my lord. In the course of my perambulations, whilst you were skulking in your room, I chanced upon the public library, wherein, at no expense, I was able to consult contemporary opinion on your reputation.
I am not interested in the arid theorizing of academics. When I note to receive the double touch of knighthood at the age of 41, I was recognized as composer of England.
So you were. Fleetingly.
Fleetingly!
Now put down that umbrella! Sullivan!
Now see what you've done.
Oh, quick, quick!
That does it! That finally does it!
Where are you going, Hazel?
To Marjorie Hinton Smythe. I'm not staying a moment longer in this house while they're here. They're poltergeists!
But you can't go to Marjorie Hinton Smythe. It's midnight.
It'll be funny in the morning when they've gone.
But Hazel!
I can't stand any more of it, Donald!
Now look here, Hazel! Hazel!
Come back here, Sullivan. Oh, Sullivan, I beg you. Mr. Wintner, please.
In the main, I prepare to tolerate the envy and malice which characterizes your attacks on my work. But when you stare at the lost chord, you plunge too deeply, Gilbert. That song, as you well know, was written in mourning for my dear brother Frederick, and you mock it.
No, you misunderstand.
I misunderstand nothing. From now on, all contact between us must cease.
What?
I want no part of you, Gilbert. I stay no longer under this roof.
But you can't get back to London at this hour.
I'll get a taxi or on the train. I get a blank check. You will settle my account.
Who on earth can imagine Sullivan on a milk tray? Huh? I must apologize for this little fracas, Mr. Wintner.
Oh,
my partner is suffering from thwarted pretensions. It was ever his undoing. The caterwauling about his brother was merely a pretext. We will settle things in the morning.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Sullivan's essential tragedy, you see, was spelt out in the Times Review of the very first performance of The Golden Legend. Yes, it was not, the writer said, a work of genius in the strict sense, but it was likely to survive until our English Beethoven appeared. Well, our English Beethoven did appear, and his name was Edward Elgar. Poor old Dr. Sullivan. And so the whirligig of time, Mr. Wintner, brings in its revenges. Good morning, Mr. Swinburne.
Good morning, sir.
My train leaves in half an hour.
Sir. I hope the breakfast was to your liking. I had to prepare it myself. Mrs. Wintner's been called away to a sick friend.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, here's our cheque for the total. Please apologise most profusely to the lady of the house for the damage to the pomatum pot. I do hope this will cover it.
More than adequately. Most generous, sir.
Well, I must thank you for your hospitality and for putting up with us.
Pleasure, sir.
I see that the weather has brightened now that I'm due to return to London.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes?
Before you go, could I ask you a question?
But of course, Mr. Wintner. I hope that I'm able to answer it.
Who are you, sir?
Who am I? Well, that's something in the nature of a philosophical question, Mr. Wintner, and it is a bit early in the morning. Who am I? I wish I knew. Who is anybody? I suppose I'm nothing more than the sum of my creations. Pressed to make a personal choice, I would say this. My name is John Wellington Wells. I'm a dealer in magic and spells, in blessings and curses of ever-filled purses, in prophecies, witches, and knells. Farewell, Mr. Wintner. Farewell.
Hello? Oh, Hazel, hello. Yes, they've gone. Mr. Gilbert's just left. Dr. Sullivan went last night. Yes. Marjorie Henton Smythe has put your mind at rest. She has? Oh, she did. She'd been trying to conjure creative spirits and had got her wires crossed. Well, if you want to see things in terms of echoes, vibrations and psychic empathy, that's up to you, dear. My explanation's rather more mundane. Two old gentlemen indulging their fantasies, just like you, Hazel. Anyway, they've gone. It's all over. Oh, I must go now. There's someone at the door. Pick up some French mustard, will you? We're on the last jar. All right, coming. Coming. Bed and breakfast for 3 days. Certainly, we can do that for you. Just leave the bags there. Now, let me see. Room 6 at the front of the house. Pleasant view of the sea, sir. Now, if you just sign the register, sir. Just there on the dotted line. Thank you, Mr. Ivan Avello, sir.
My poor little heart, although the way be long, you brave and strong, fly home where.
That was Curtain Call by Jeremy Tiptoft, with George Cooper as the first gent and David Garth as the second gent. Mr. Wintner was played by Brian Smith and Mrs. Wintner by Tessa Worsley. Curtain Call was directed by David Johnston.